Good evening and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, June 14, 2009. It's now 8:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. You can send us email anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com. That two is numeric two. His weekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. Folks, he takes a macroeconomic point of view and really makes it pertinent to us so we can protect ourselves. He is excellent. And by the way, that newsletter is free of charge. What a deal. He also has a paid subscription type newsletter, which is very inexpensive and it's excellent. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on Contrary Investors Cafe. Lastly, I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, excuse me. Good evening, everyone. This evening, we will have as our guest, and it's a really privilege that he has accepted our invitation. His name is Michael Johnson. He is the United States Representative to Pathways to Peace and a member of the UN Spiritual Caucus. Michael works nationally and internationally promoting a culture of peace. Michael is a professional and personal business coach. He draws his spirituality from cross-cultural traditions, including strong training with Native American teachers. Michael has been a practitioner of yoga in the lineage of Swami Kripalu, I'm sorry I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, for over 35 years. Mike is married, a leader of earth-based ceremonies, and leads an ongoing men's sweat lodge in the Berkshire Mountains. And please, we're going to talk about the pathways to peace. And quite frankly, I have questions about peace in general. So we're going to learn a lot this evening, and we're really privileged to have him call in this evening. He should be here in a few minutes. I asked him to call in about 5 minutes after the hour, so we had time to do all the proper introductions. I am contemplating changing our Sunday night broadcast from 8 o'clock to 7 o'clock. I haven't made a decision yet, but we may be doing this 1 hour earlier. Of course, I'll let everyone know and give everyone proper notice on that. And you can also consult our blog to find out if there's going to be any changes to our broadcast at all. The past week has been a very interesting week in that nothing really different has happened, but things continue to roll on. And folks, I am getting very, very concerned. We are getting much too complacent with the manner in which our politicians are handling our affairs. Now, I say our affairs, and they are handling it, and we are allowing them to do it. I think we have a real problem, and we better start taking a stance. I know many states are, many people are. And the voices are getting louder. Many people who had supported Barack Obama for president, without question, you know, are now becoming some of his loudest critics. And I applaud that. At least people have the honesty to say, you know, this may be a problem, which it is. Anyway, we're still waiting for Michael to call in. Remember that we'd like you to call in with your questions, 646-652-4620. Michael, is that you?
Yes, Michael's checking in. Hi, Joe.
Hello, Michael. It's a real pleasure to have you on our program this evening. You are a little bit of a departure from our usual subject, but you came very highly recommended to us, and I was curious, I guess, personally about your program. This evening, could you start off by giving us or giving our listeners some background as to what the pathways to peace is about, and maybe how you got to be involved in that, and we'll sort of take it from there, okay? And we may, sure. Hopefully we'll get a couple of calls, and maybe we'll have some questions for you.
Sure. Yeah, well, it's interesting how I got started with Pathways to Peace. This was back around 2000. I live in Western Massachusetts in a little rural town called Monterey, and I do life coaching. I do that. I had been doing that full time up until that time, and I got this kind of intuition that I needed to start visiting New York City for some reason. I had no idea what that was about, but and I'm not very much of a city person, but I just kind of tabled that for a bit, and then I was 9/11 hit, in which it was a very, because we were close to the city. We had a lot of people leave the city. You know, it was very, the proximity to New York was close to where I lived, so it had a pretty deep impact on me. And I guess from that, it was, the trauma of experiencing that, I felt that I needed to become more active in the world as an activist and a peace builder. It was a very deep impulse after 9/11.
Right. Now, did you physically witness the airplanes careening into the World Trade Center, or were you just in the city at the time?
No, actually, I was not in the city. I was in my home. I was actually working out at the gym and on a treadmill when we saw the planes hitting the towers.
Yeah.
So, but we're about 2 hours north of the city, and it's a second home area for a lot of people who live in the city. So, as I said, our whole community was impacted in that way. So I kind of saw that as a clarion call. You know, there was definitely a signal for me internally to be more active, and I felt that there was, we were going to see some big changes in the world. So I didn't know how I was going to act. And then I was invited by a client, one of my clients, to attend the UN youth event. I guess this was soon after that, maybe 6 months after that, and once I experienced, I had very little understanding of the UN, and I went to that event, and I knew that there was something I needed to participate on some level, and from that first experience at the UN, I went to other meetings and conferences and got to know some people, especially non-governmental organization representatives at the UN, and I learned about Pathways to Peace, because Pathways have been an NGO affiliate since like 1983.
Okay, so you were not the initiator of the Pathways to Peace. This is something that had already existed, and you
right.
became a
yeah.
participating member. Okay, all right.
That's right. Yeah, it was actually founded by a woman named Avon Madison. In 1983, and so I didn't start until my work with Pathways until 2002, and that's when I learned about the International Day of Peace that happens every September 21st.
Right.
I learned about it, the Peace Day, and I felt like I wanted to really kind of get behind it, and consequently I learned that Pathways was one of the organizations that helped to initiate it back in 1982. So that, long story short, that's how I got connected. So since then, I've been asked to represent Pathways at the United Nations, and I've taken on a major role in promoting the International Day of Peace. other projects. We have a big project called the Culture of Peace Initiative, where we help to link organizations around the world to kind of join their strengths together to become more effective in what they do. So long story short, that's how I got involved with Pathways. Pathways is basically, you know, we have like it's mostly composed of volunteers that align with the mission and do different, you know, kind of peace-building work around the world. My particular role is to, be a representative at the UN and also help promote the International Day of Peace.
All right, now, working with the UN, that's sort of that's heavy duty stuff. I've had no affiliation, never had a contact with the UN, but it seems just so incredibly foreign to me. You know, for anyone that I'm speaking to, someone who's even been in the UN, and that's very interesting. Did you find that intimidating at first, or was that a very welcoming atmosphere?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I had very similar. I mean, I'm 2 hours away from the UN. It's kind of like in my backyard, so to speak. I had no understanding of it. You know, occasionally I hear news reports about it, I read about it, had really no understanding about it. But my first experience was pretty astounding, because I saw, you know, it was basically called the Gandhi King Season of Nonviolence conference for young people. And it's basically what they were doing there was they were highlighting Mahatma Gandhi and Reverend King's teachings and their life work and inspiring kids in that way. And I didn't expect that. You know, it was very moving and heartfelt, and kids got really inspired. And I actually felt pretty much at home in that building, and which was a surprise to me, and that's why I continue to work on that level.
I see. Well, you know, it's interesting because the UN has a very jaded reputation. If and I'm being kind. There is the term peace is sort of. I'm sorry, but and. By the way, I applaud what you are doing, and I sincerely mean that. And please don't take my questions as at all as a criticism for what you're doing. Believe me, I mean, you're going above and beyond the call of duty, and I want to tell all of my listeners that. So please don't, let's not go down the wrong trail. I personally have always had a problem, not a problem, but a difficulty in understanding the term peace. I know what it means and all that stuff, you know. Right. It's sort of a ethereal term. And
that's right.
When the UN is associated, from what the little that I've read about the UN, in nations jockeying for position and garnering the votes that they need in order to forward their own agenda, even if that agenda is genocide in their own country, and we've seen that happen over and over again. I see this tremendous conflict when we talk about peace, and then in the same sentence say UN. I have this neurological bombardment going in my head saying, you know, does not compute. Can you help me a little bit with that?
Sure. Well, so I get your understanding about that and the inner conflict when you're at peace in UN. So basically, this is my understanding of it, and the reason why I want to, you know, contribute and help make the organization be effective in terms of its role and its mission. And it's basically it starts with the statement about the UN being its charter is basically to create peace and security for all people on the planet.
Right.
That's the basic.
That's their sort of mission, right, of the UN, right?
That's the mission statement. And you know, of course, if you look at the world where it's the mission is not complete or it's not happening yet. However, I do believe in the mission, and part of the reason why I think that the UN can work, because the whole concept of it is to you know, rather than to like have conflict with bullets and bombs, is to be able to have honest dialogue,
right?
And through dialogue, have from honest dialogue come to some conclusions that can resolve conflicts without war and killing and that kind of thing. So, this is another piece of what I grasped about the UN too. So I think Eleanor Roosevelt described it. She said it's like a machine. And whoever is like operating the machine, that's how effective it's going to be.
Right.
And so, if we can feel like without any kind of organization, the people who are, called to, support it or to work with it on some level, really, the effectiveness depends on the consciousness of the people that work with that organization.
Okay. So, I'm sorry. Yeah. I just stepped all over your words, Michael. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm interested. I think that there's a new consciousness, and especially getting young people that are, and this is another part of my story. I have a very strong connection with Native people, Native Americans, and I've met with a lot of elders all across North America, and there was one elder that I met in Canada. His name was William Commander. He's probably like 96 years old right now. And he said in one of their prophecies that the thing that's going to make the change, in the world, especially here in North America, from the kind of domination that's going on, is that young people will go to places of power and speak their truth with love and respect to the leaders.
I agree.
And so that's kind of part of my role is teaching young people how to interact with governmental organizations so that they can have a strong voice.
Right.
That's actually happening. So this Thursday, I'm actually bringing a student group from our area. There's a briefing on climate change that we're going to hear about, and when these young people go and they speak, it's amazing how the response they get in the audience. So that's kind of like my part of it, my aspect of it, and I do believe that we're going to see some changes where the UN is much more effective. It's still kind of operating from, it's 1945, it was created like in 45, 46. The mindset during that time, but
yeah.
It's actually going through a transformation right now. I've been witnessing it since the last 5 or 6 years.
Okay. Just let me take a second for station identification. Folks, this is Joe Cristiano. You're at Liberty Talk Radio. We are pleased to have with us this evening Michael Johnson. He's a U.S. representative to the Pathways to Peace, and we're talking about that endeavor and exactly how it works. And now, please call in 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620 with any questions or comments that you might have. Now, Mike, I guess, do you go by Mike or Michael, or am I addressing you?
I'm from Michael, yeah.
Okay, Michael. Okay. What, the devil's always in the details, as they say, So what specifically do you do? And I'm having a difficulty couching the question properly because I'm not sure what the question is. I guess I said, what is your objective is peace, right? But what are the nuts and bolts that you do? What are the things that you do, and what are you trying to accomplish? And then how do you measure, whether or not you're making any headway? I mean, I'm having such a difficult time grasping success, if you will, or progress.
Sure.
You know, yeah. Could you help me in that regard?
Sure, I sure can. And when you talk about peace too, and how to describe it, that's to me that particular to how to answer that. It's totally individual. There's no one answer for everybody.
And
so I've really pondered that myself, you know, that question, and it's come up a lot, like, what does peace mean? And it really depends on the individual.
Yeah. Michael, excuse me, can you hold that thought? We have a caller in here. Let's see if we can take that caller before the hang up. Okay, hold on, please.
Sure.
Okay, caller, area code 740, your first name, where you're calling from, please, and your comments or questions.
Hi, Joe. This is Tony in Ohio.
Oh, hi, Tony. Thank you for calling in.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question for Michael, if that was okay.
Sure, please.
Hi, Tony. Yeah.
Now, you said that Pathways is an NGO, or is it a part of one? Or?
Yes. So NGO, that's a generic term, a general term that means non-governmental organization. And so Pathways to Peace is, it's a 501c3, and we operate as a non-governmental organization.
Similar to a lobbying group, am I correct?
It's actually not. It's not. I think a lobbying group could be considered an NGO, but there's a distinct. You know, NGO is basically a general term. Yeah.
And the reason I asked that was because when Joe said nuts and bolts, that was kind of like what I was going to ask when I was calling in. He almost read my mind perfectly there. I'm just wondering how does the, you know, because I find if you follow the money, that's how everything works, and you find the explanation better. You know, like you said, peace is kind of a different definition for everybody. So when you get into the philosophical side of it, it's hard to explain maybe what your job is. But what is the money aspect, and like, is money allocated to you or to your department, and then how does that money spent? Maybe that would better describe it.
Yeah, sure. Well, so basically, I work as a volunteer, but I do get occasionally some stipend money from Pathways to Peace. Sometimes I get my transportation to and from, you know, the UN. We do have grants that come through our organization. Like, we can, you know, there's like different grantees that can grant money. But we basically operate on a very, very slim budget. I think our budget last year was something like $75,000, something like that. So in fundraising is, you know, something pretty challenging. Like, what I do in my community is I let people know the work that I'm doing, and if they want to fund it, they can write a check to Pathways, and the money comes to me for my operating expenses.
And just so I'm clear, like, there are, I know there are other NGOs, obviously, that operate within the UN. Some are larger than others. Right. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, basically, the reason why NGOs are affiliated with the UN is because the NGOs are like the represent the people, you know. The other aspect of the UN, the government aspect, you know, where they have a Security Council and the General Assembly, that they're kind of like government delegates, ambassadors that work together. So the NGOs are like the, you know, where we interact with the government officials to make suggestions. If it's something we don't like that's going on, we can make, you know, we can put it in writing and put it out there. And it's kind of, it's a healthy way for an organization to work to include non-governmental organizations. Yeah.
Michael, I appreciate you answering my questions, and I don't want to sound negative at all.
Sure.
I think you're describing it, you know, really well, and I'm understanding exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
But this is my only comment or slight problem I have with the system that the United Nations uses with these NGOs. Like I said, some are bigger than others, and
that's right.
Like you said, yeah, that's true. that leaves a situation where it's not very democratic, because those who are getting more money are going to speak louder for their constituents as opposed to others. There's no real democracy when dollars do the voting, because some of us have more dollars than others. Richer NGOs, let's say, that represent richer people are going to get heard a lot louder in the United Nations than NGOs that represent, say, third world countries or people in America even that maybe are not of affluent means. Right.
Yeah, I think that I agree with you. I think that can happen. However, I've seen some small NGOs with some very, people that are really articulate and know how to speak and to write clearly have some clout there too. So I think it can work both ways, and it's kind of like our organization. Like, here's an example: our organization is pretty small. We helped to support the first International Day of Peace that started back in it's 82 was when the resolution got passed. A small group of people had a, which I feel, a pretty big impact, and now that the International Day of Peace, it's expanded almost every year, where last year there were like 10,000 different observances around the world, like millions of people were, you know, supporting it, and it came from a small little NGO out of California that helped get this going. So it's true, the money talks, but sometimes very passionate, focused group of people that are, you know, really believe in what you're doing can have a big impact also.
Well, keep up the good work, and thanks for taking my call, Joe. And, you know, I hope everything goes well. I just think it's easier for them to give you a holiday on that than it is to give you some real policy. And that's part of the fact that you're a smaller NGO. And I hope you guys get more money, more donations, and do a lot more good work. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Tony.
Tony, thank you very much. And thank you for your thought-provoking questions. Appreciate that very much. Bye-bye now. We have another call here. Let's take this call. Let's see who this is.
Sure.
Caller 918, your first name and where you're calling from, please. Oops. Caller? Caller, you're on the air. Area code 918, caller 918.
Hello.
Hello. Your first name and your first name, where you're calling from, and your comments or questions, please. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Pat. I'm from Tulsa. I just wanted to backtrack just a moment, if you wouldn't mind. You mentioned earlier that you had seen the UN changing over the past 5 or 6 years, you said, and I wondered in what way you had seen changes occurring.
Yes. It's interesting. The most obvious way is the building is being rehabilitated. It's when you walk into it, it's almost like walking back in time, because there hasn't been many changes to the actual physical structure. And so this year, they're beginning to like rehabilitate the whole building. So that's totally on an external level. This is more anecdotal that I see in terms of the changes. There's a certain sense of more openness and more freedom to interact and to speak, and also that UN staff seems to be more available to NGOs, and also I think, and I know in our community, one of the things that's happening is that people are beginning to understand how to interact with the UN, and so that there's more. I think the NGOs are getting more respect and more. More airtime, and so that's something that I've noticed in the last 5 years. One of the biggest issues with the UN is the Security Council. It's basically doesn't represent the world in the way in a democratic way. So there's a lot of movement to restructure and make the way that you went structured to make it more effective in this new millennium. Because as I said earlier, it was designed post-Second World War, and it's really time for some structural changes.
Thank you. Are those kinds of changes occurring because of the characteristics of the top people in the UN, or is that being pushed by individual countries, individual nations that have membership in the UN?
Yeah, I think it's both. You know, it's the NGO community where, you know, the NGOs, like I said earlier, we're there to, like, okay, peace and security for all people, let's make it work, and how can we do that, how can we make it better? And then there's individual countries that are, and also I think the Secretary General is looking to restructure, you know, like how to make the structure more effective. And even though I've been affiliated for a while, it's such a huge body of it's a huge organization. I'm still learning, you know, a lot about it. I would suggest that maybe go onto the UN.org website and check it out. You know, you might be able to get some more precise answers about that. But I can say this is more from my own personal experience when I go there and experience the briefings and my interactions with staff.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Pat.
Thank you for calling in, Pat.
You're welcome.
Michael, again, yeah, I want to go back to the very term, you know, the very term peace in and of itself. That term could be very elusive. Now, what exactly do you do when you visit the UN on a weekly basis, monthly basis? What do you do precisely? Walk us through what you do to shake these guys up, you know? I mean, you don't carry an AK-47 when you go in there and threaten these guys, do you?
No. Security's pretty tight when you go through
okay.
there.
Okay. Yeah, I figured as much.
Yeah. Yeah, and they've been, you know, I think Al-Qaeda's been, they've targeted the UN before. And I've actually, you know, like right after 9/11, I was supposed to, you know, bring some student groups there and just people didn't want to go near it because of all the terrorist threats.
Right, yeah, I can understand that, right.
Yeah, so so what I do there, so my basic role is to represent an organization in the system. That's my basic role. And my biggest project is the expansion of the International Day of Peace that happens every September 21st.
Right.
Yeah, so that's kind of like my major. So in all my interactions, that's the top of my list. If I meet a delegate, another delegate or an ambassador, another NGO rep, you know, I explore usually with them, like, how can you support the International Day of Peace, something like that.
All right, let me just stop right there. Allow me to interrupt. No one in his political right mind is going to say peace. Not for that, get out of here, and throw you out, right? I mean, no one in the right mind is going to do that. So it's going to be receptive, but I mean, it almost seems to me, and excuse me, I'm such a cynic, and I apologize for being such a cynic,
fine,
and I applaud what you're doing.
You
know, where people say, sure, you know, we'll humor this guy, you know, we're for peace, you know, I know there's a lot of genocide going on there, and we sort of like it, but, you know, we're really, really, bottom line, we're for peace, don't let that disturb you back there. I know everyone in my country's starving, and I'm becoming a zillionaire, but don't let that influence you. And I'm just saying that, you know, no one's going to say, hey, Charlie, not for peace, get out of here. They're all going to say yes. So how do you qualify that what you're doing is you're really getting through these people are really sincere, or they're saying what they're supposed to say because they're in the UN and they're supposed to be peace people, you know, and yet right. Everyone seems to be at war for one time, including the United States. I don't absolve the United States at all in this whole thing, you know, but I mean all of them seem to be jockeying and doing something, and you know, nuclear missiles and stuff like that. How do you? If it was me, I'd go nuts trying to handle that. I'd shake people up and say, you know, be honest with me, you know.
Right.
How do you do that? I mean, I guess I'm asking a very difficult question and a broad brush question, but how do you deal with that?
Yeah. Well, one way that I deal with it is I've been a meditator since 1970, and practice yoga, and I, you know, have a kind of a spiritual, you know, that's kind of a spiritual life. And
okay.
When we talk about peace, what I've done in my life through my practice and my understanding is discovered that peace resides within me.
Right.
So that's kind of my life stand right there. So when I interact with people like you're describing, most of the time I can be clear in my communication with them, but also feel peaceful inside so that I don't get activated by their, like, say, dishonesty or, however they're being. So I bring that to my work. So there are people that will be that way, as you described, kind of like two-faced or not really caring, or say anything just to, like, you know, what a lot of politicians do. They just say stuff to, you know, get votes or to be supported. However, there are, I look for people that are sincere and that are, you know, really willing and able to support in a good way. And so that's kind of how I operate. In terms of like, okay, how effective is it? Like, what keeps me going? You know, am I having any effect on the world? And I want to start at home. So the kids that I've been starting to get, you know, taking to the UN and kind of helping them to understand world affairs and how to influence policy, you know, these are like high school kids, and some of them are, you know, freshmen in college. They come back to the community, and they're actually doing peace work in our community. And here's an example. There was in our local high school, there was a series of bomb threats that went on.
Yeah.
And it really shook the kids up. They were really afraid. So this kid that I've been mentoring, bringing to the UN, he's actually a hip-hop artist, and he created this song, a peace song, about, you know, about peace. And
okay.
So he worked with his high school principal. They had this assembly. He performed a song and had this kind of interaction with the kids to help them, like, chill out from, you know, having these bomb threats occur in their school. So that's just, like, one example that happens locally. Now, internationally, this is kind of like jumping internationally. Like, last year, the International Day of Peace, by the way, is a resolution that called for a ceasefire, a global ceasefire,
right.
Which is a huge, you know, resolution.
Right. Yeah.
So last year in Afghanistan, there was a ceasefire that was, you know, generated. It was generated through the UN and through NGOs. And actually, the Taliban signed off on it. They said we're not gonna do any armed conflict. So when they had that, ceasefire, they're able to go into these remote villages, and give them immunizations for polio, which was starting to break out over there.
Yeah.
So that was like one example of this Peace Day and the work that we're supporting. Having like impact on the ground, and there's thousands of stories like that that, you know, we don't really hear about in the media, but are happening because of this global effort.
Well, you know, I guess maybe I'm too simplistic. I look at the world, and I say, well, probably of the 6 billion people in the world, about 2 billion have never had a glass of clean water. About right. 1 billion of the 2 billion have never had a glass of water to start off with. Now, when you're talking about numbers like that, you're talking about a substantial portion, substantial percentage of the people who have absolutely nothing. You know, we here in the States, our problem is we have too much. We have too much, as George Collins would say, too much stuff, you know? And we have too much baggage, as, you know, Jared Diamond wrote in his book, Guns, Germs, and Steel. You know, why do we have so much stuff and no one else does? And it's a fascinating book, 800 yeah. pages of it. You know, we have all of these people who are in dire straits by any definition. I mean, they don't have any water. I mean, how bad could things get when you can't even get the water? I mean, forget the food. The food's down the chain somewhere.
Right.
And there are governments who know this. I mean, it hasn't been going on since last Wednesday. It's been going on literally forever. And, you know, and then these same people have representatives that go to the UN and they talk about peace. I short circuit. I just thought everything short circuits on me. Nothing computes. You see where I'm coming from. How do you deal with it? I couldn't deal with that. I could never do your job. Good thing I don't. I'd be a consummate failure. But you know, how do you deal with that?
Yeah. Okay. So here's how we deal with it. It's interesting you brought up the whole water issue, and it's actually in Africa. So here's how I deal with it. I look for solutions. Okay. The guys that are, like you were saying, that are representing governments or people that are basically in it for the money or the power or whatever wrong reasons, they're, you know, they may never change. However, this is an example of like how I deal with that. So last year, I learned about the small African country called Burkina Faso. I have some friends that go there every year for training. They've actually been adopted by a village. They're the second poorest nation in the world. They're like just what you said. The women have to walk like 6 miles a day for water.
Yeah.
No, virtually no medical care. I mean, people are really hard up. And so our organization decided to like make a difference in their country. And so we began a project to have wells drilled in each one of the remote villages in that country. So that, you know, to eliminate that entire issue that you're speaking about. And we're actually launching it this year in Burkina Faso. We're planning a peace concert that's going to generate funds. And this is all done, you know, non-governmentally. You know, we get support from governments. You know, they have to, like, give us licenses and things like that. But it's also all done, like, by the people.
Right.
And so we have this project, you know, to raise enough funds to drill wells and provide clean water for these people. Because my friends, they have this group called the Barca Foundation. They went over there and they met with the people. They didn't go to the government. They met with the villagers. They said, "What's your major issue in this country?" And they said, "Water." So we're helping to resolve that.
Let me interrupt you. Here's my point. This is my problem. Yeah. Not my problem, I guess. And in that, you're bypassing the system to, in order, you know, to help these people out. And I applaud you. That's wonderful. But you work with the UN. The UN are not the people. They're the head honchos. They're elected by the prime minister or the president of the country or the ruler or the grand high exalted Mr. Ruler, whomever it is. And there's a person there. Now, they know these people are walking 5-6 miles a day for a glass of water. You know, they're not doing anything about it. So you're going around them and to help them. And again, I applaud you for that. But if your mission is to work with the UN, how come we're not hanging these guys? I mean, how come we're not holding these guys accountable so that the reason why they're doing this is because everyone has their own agenda in the UN. None of them are there for altruistic reasons. They're there for very selfish reasons. I guess I have a very, very jaded view of this whole situation of the UN itself and the way it operates. And it seems like you have to, you're the UN rep, basically, but you have to go around the UN in order to get anything done.
Well,
I'm having a problem with that.
Excuse me. So the thing is, like when you say the word UN, it's there's different bodies and pieces of it. Like as I described, like the you know, like the how the Security Council is really not very democratic. You know, it's like it's not. They don't.
Oh, right. It's only made about France, China, United States, Britain, and a couple other countries. Right. And
yeah, yeah. But so it's like there are other aspects of the UN. Now here's how we get support from the UN. So we're planning this concert in Burkina Faso. And there's a in their capital. It's called Ouagadougou. Luckily, there's a UN information center there.
Yeah.
And so we're getting support from that information center to, like here's one example. If we want to get funding or we want to ask for A-list artists to kind of show up to the concert, and we have a letter of support from the UN mission there, it gives a lot of clout. It gives a lot of clout. And the UN mission in Burkina Faso, they've been really helpful for us. They've been, you know, bridging gaps with the government. You know, they helped us get there's a stadium that we're renting for their concert, that kind of thing. So the thing about that's a lot of people have a misunderstanding about the UN. It's not just government people working. There's other aspects of it.
Okay, I guess I don't understand. Yeah, the workings of the UN itself. Yeah. I always think of them as just the heads of state, basically sitting around and figuring how they can nuke the guy next to them. You know, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah. The level. I personally think the level of dialogue around that is getting better. You know, it's getting clearer, and that's how I kind of open my conversation. I think even the Dalai Lama spoke about this. Is, you know, and this is what I believe, is through conscious communication, you know, honest dialogue, that the conflicts can be resolved, and that's what I, you know, that's what I think that where the UN can go in terms of resolving conflicts around the world.
Well, basically, there's peace is the end result of some sort of action. And if a country is involved in something which does not result in a peaceful society, then it's that government, it's that institution that's running that country that's got to change. Now, how do you get these unscrupulous people to change, you know, when they're the blockade to peace in and of itself? And how do you get to that point?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's a couple ways, and I think that you know, one of the issues too has to deal with like sovereignty. You know, like even though there's like 192 nations in the United Nations, you know, they still have to recognize each nation's sovereignty.
Right. No, I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like what's going on in like North Korea right now? You know, the North Koreans are establishing they're getting their nuclear weapons on board.
Right.
And so what the UN is trying to do is trying to get the cooperation from the Security Council, from surrounding nations to, okay, how can we contain it? How can we put pressure on them to stand down from their, you know, nuclear proliferation? So that's one way. That's one way it could work. And then there's, you know, there's international law that could help in that way too. So,
yeah.
But I think that to me, there's always like on planet Earth, there's always going to be conflict, always.
Yeah, right.
But it's how we resolve conflict is what's going to change. And at least, you know, like what I'm thinking, you know, like and I think I get where you're coming from, Joe. Like it's really hard to see people in power that are really taking advantage of the people, you know, like genocide going on, and they're sitting in their ivory towers, like,
Yeah, knowing the guy across the street has no water, but they won't spend the money, you know, to put an aquifer in or pipeline in or, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever it takes to supply people with water, they'll let them starve. And then they go to the UN and they talk about peace. I'm going, wait a minute, aren't we being disingenuous around here? You know, if anything, we should, you know, take those guys, hang them, you know, and put in a human being in there, you know, rather than a grand high exalted mystic ruler, as Jackie Gleason used to say about the lodge, you know, he belonged to. And I just have this cynical viewpoint of these clowns at the UN, you know, saying one thing and doing absolutely the opposite, and to the detriment of the entire population.
That's right. Well, what I see happening, Joe, is that the transformation, and I believe we live, you know, I lived through the 60s, you know, and the change that happened during that time, and I believe we're living at a time that's it's probably the most transformative time ever on the planet. Like we're on that cusp, and one of the things that's going on, and you, I think you're a part of it because of what you're doing in the media, you know, doing these kind of shows and helping to educate people and give people a voice. It's really about the people coming into power and really working the government, you know what I mean? It's like not the government working the people, but the people working the government.
Right, that's the way it should be, right.
Yeah, and I think that's going on right now. And I spoke about in my bio about the Culture of Peace initiative. So what's going on, and this is really flying under the radar of major media, is that there are these huge networks of people around the world, you know, becoming aware of, like, the shenanigans you're talking about, becoming informed, and also learning how to be active to influence government and policy so that the people, the wrongdoers, you know, are being, you know, exposed and they're being pressured to, you know, change. I mean, we saw that in Iran. Look what's happening in Iran today. Or, you know, like, who knows what happened during an election. But the people certainly came out on the street.
Right.
And probably took a big chance.
I was glad to see that. I mean, not casting, you know, blame to anybody, but, you know, if the people feel it was unfair and they go into the street, that's what they should do. And I applaud them for that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So that's going on, and a big part of it is the technology you're using, is the internet. There's these huge global networks forming, and they're beginning to have a lot of influence.
Yeah.
And it's not top down, you know. It's really grassroots.
Yeah. Yep.
And I feel good about that.
Michael, do you ever deal with the causes of unrest or causes of lack of peace, or do you just deal with the issues of attempting to make things more peaceful in the ways that you can with the people that you can?
Yeah. Well, the one of the causes I feel is extreme poverty on the planet, and how resources are misallocated, you know, and then there's the domination, you know, like the domination that's going on the planet. There's a set of goals called the Millennium Development Goals. I don't know if you heard about them, but it actually came out of the UN and other world bodies. And the first goal was eliminate extreme poverty on the planet. I think if that happened, you know, and we're working towards that. That's why this Burkina Faso project is to eliminate extreme poverty in that nation. I think a lot of the causes of the conflict would diminish right there with just eliminating.
One proven way, Michael, and I'm no brilliant guy who knows has the solutions for all the problems of the world, but one proven way, it's been repeated millions of times, is if government left people alone, let them truly be free, and let them to their own accord, and made them, whatever their circumstances are, made them prosper for themselves, like the army says, be the best that they can be without government interference, there would be no poverty in the world. There would be absolutely no poverty in the world. I mean, the only reason why there are is because they can't do anything. If they do something, they get shot. Soldiers come by. They, you know, they pillage their homes. They burn the houses down. They rape the females or the daughter. You know, they do all these wonderful things. And but they don't leave people alone. They strangle. This is what's happening in the United States. We're getting strangled with more and more regulation. And where are we going? We're not becoming a more free nation. We're becoming a more socialistic or fascistic. I know it sounds extreme, but you know, with government owning the means of production and all that stuff, I mean, Marx would be proud of us, you know. And I'm just saying, just leave the people alone, and the only reason why government should exist is to ensure there's a rule of law. So I don't take what's rightfully yours, and you don't take what's rightfully mine. But and if either one of us do that, we have to go in a court of law and say, you know, and defend ourselves for it and give the money back or whatever the case may be. But this is what I see missing, as I see the causes of unrest being the governments, and these are the governments that are being represented in the UN. I'm saying it's like calling Don Corleone, you know, of the of organized crime, and say, "Hey, can you help us clean up the city?" You know, he'll say, "Sure, I will." Anyway, I'm sorry for the diatribe, and I get real frustrated because I see so much suffering in the world, and you know, again, you know, and it bothers the heck out of me. We have only 2 more minutes to go, Michael. Let me give you these 2 minutes. If you can just tell our listeners, you know, if there's a website that you'd like for them to go to, also, if there's you know, if you want them to donate or whatever the case may be, the next 2 minutes are yours. Okay,
thank you, I appreciate that. So the first website I would suggest is the internationaldayofpeace.org. That's a website that we helped get off the ground, and it's basically to unite people around the world to, you know, to support the Peace Day in their own way, however they want to do that. Then there's Pathways to Peace, pathwaystopeace.org. That's our main website. That's the website for my NGO, and we also have another website called theCultureOfPeace.org. So either those 3 websites are all kind of linked together. You know, we kind of have them linked together. You learn a lot. If you peruse those websites, you learn a lot. Donations are always welcome. You know, you can go right to Pathways to Peace website. If you want to contact me, you can contact me at michael@pathwaystopeace.org. If you have any questions or somehow I can help you, you know, understand better what I'm, the work that I'm doing. And just, you know, like, I feel that I want to leave with this. My hope is that we're moving into a place of more freedom and consciousness, and I believe we're going to awaken into this whole new way of being on the planet, where we're like, we're just saying, Joe, where there's a balance between government and people, where you know, there's not oppression going on,
right.
But there's this, you know, really good balance between the people and their government.
Well, I'm with you 100%, Michael. I really am. And Mike, if you will email me with your mailing address and your T-shirt size, I'd like to send you an official Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt. Would you do that?
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you so much for being our guest. It's been a very interesting conversation. Again, I applaud your efforts and good luck to you.
Thank you, Joe. It's been a pleasure speaking with you and your audience.
Thank you very much. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Well, that's interesting program. You know, I guess I'm hard assets guy, you know, I gotta see stuff, and you know, I would get frustrated very quickly with you know, with a job such as what he has, so I give him a tremendous amount of credit. Alright, anyway, this is the end of today's program. We'd like to thank Grant Shakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal. The government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.